Good morning, everyone. They told me that not many people would turn up for an 8 o'clock session. So that's not 8 o'clock session. Oh, sorry. Well, I heard that there was a free bus that that left half an hour ago. So that's why, because I was wondering why people were here 45 minutes early. And so there was a free bus which got you all here. That's pretty good. Was it from Conrad's? No? All right. Okay, so... Oh, that's a low blow. All right, I've just been trying to get into this Twitter stuff. So I'm tweeting as I go through this session. So you'll be... I believe you're meant to use AU, TechEd, and Dev316. So here we go. All right, so I'm going to start off my talk today. And I'm going to try to use the Scrum methodology through my session. Now, how many people here are using Scrum? That is great. That is 84% of the room, which correlates to the right stat. So, we all love Scrum. Now, if you're in the Scrum world, which most of us are in these days, you will find that there's some people that are very religious on it. Who's met those religious people? Right, so half the room. So I have one in the room. Mr. Richard Banks, stand up. So Richard Banks, if you've ever met Richard, he is what I classify as a Scrum white robe. When he's talking about Scrum, you can sit down. That's enough. But when he's talking about Scrum, it's almost like he's wearing this white robe. And whenever he says anything, he's thinking Ken Schwaber is up there listening to him, so he doesn't ever want to step out of the box. So so I put together a poster just recently, and I find this interesting. This is a little poster that I did on Scrum, and I've got a few of them, so you can collect them if you want. How many people want one? Oh, free stuff, gee. That's half the room. Even Richard wants one. So I find this this interesting because I'm only just trying to get a handle on this Twitter stuff, and I did a tweet, which was this one. And it got and Bitly tells me that people weren't interested in anything else, but I got a lot of click-throughs on that. So I don't have enough to give everyone that wants one, but if you send me an email and you do a tweet during the session, then I will, I'll post you one. Okay, that's a good deal. So, during the session, I'll try to run through it in the proper Scrum methodology as best I can. And I guess I'll just tell you right now, for those that everyone has their favorite bits of Scrum, but for me, the hand-on-heart commitment to the PBIs for the team is good. The way that the product owner prioritizes the backlog is good, and the pig and chicken analogy. I won't go through that. All right. So a little about me. I am the chief architect at SSW. We're a gold partner in Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane. I am an MVP in TFS or the ALM track, and my favourite project is my two little girls. All right, and that's the company I work for. All right, and this is, I live in Coogee, which is just south of Bondi Beach, not as well known as Bondi Beach, but and actually got too many Brits and Poms around, but apart from that, it's pretty good. Okay, so here is the way I'm going to go through this. I am going to try to give everybody in the room some tips, whether they're project managers, devs, or testers. How many people do Scrum or project management, that leading a team, that type of thing? Okay, maybe a quarter. How many people are full-time just devving? All right, most of us. And how many people do some type of testing? Okay, oh, more testers than devs. Than project managers. That's very good. All right. So I'm going to start off with project managers. This is the first part. This is the sprint planning if you're doing Scrum. And I've broken this down. I've just been through the states, and I've broken this down to three types of project managers. The first type was a guy, we'll call him Tom, and he was from Detroit. And this guy that I met was a pretty serious type of guy. He's old-fashioned, no nonsense, didn't need to stuff around. I don't need no project tracking system. I keep my own projects. I get stuff done. I don't need any fancy stuff. Then you meet this this other guy from Chicago. I also know someone from Portland that's almost identical. And this guy tries to be as professional as possible. He puts on the professional suit. He tries to use stuff from the file share. He is constantly asking devs for updates. He calls a lot of ad hoc meetings. Anyone know anyone like Tom? Yes, and they're annoying. Then you have the professional, the absolute professional. Let's call this, well, he's the absolute professional. He has a, he runs in a scrum manner. He has a daily burn down. He brings the burn down to the stand-up. It's always up to date. He has the story overviews report. He has these reports automated, so they're coming to his inbox straight away. He uses a task board, whether it's physical or electronic. He has acceptance criteria. He has the definition of done, keeps a nice wiki, works in a strict 2-week sprint, and uses TFS and SharePoint as the single source of truth. All right. So who's at that point? That's three people. All right. Okay, great. So hopefully we'll improve that during the session. So one of the first things I do when I go to a company is encourage them to have a bit of a war room, okay? The war room is where things happen. And the first thing I like to know is in this war room, to have something where everybody knows what the agenda is, all right? So, you know, while you're busy looking straight ahead, you're not even seeing what's right in front of your eyes. So I don't know how many people even knew that Osama was in that room. So I always say you should have a roadmap. The roadmap is, you know, the big things, so you all know what the key things are. So in this war room, there's a few things that I like to have. First of all, I like to have the mock-ups of future screens that we're potentially developing. We'll talk about mock-ups shortly. I like to have the product roadmap, the big features that the product owner wants in the future. I want to have the definition of done visible. I do find it interesting that in software, we don't have a lot of rules and regulations. Like if you're in a law firm, until you get accepted by the bar, you're not allowed to sign certain letters, do certain processes, but in our industry we can do whatever we like, which is great. There's a number of these things that I think should go through a little bit more policy than we go through at the moment. Definition of done is great. It means that the team is agreeing to the level of quality. I like to see, you know, signatures on that. Okay. I like to, if we start modifying that type of stuff, I think that it, you know, in the future, we will have certain people sign off on those things. I'll come to that. A task board, physical or electronic. And I put that Scrum image that I've just told you. So they're the five things I do. All right. So I believe that I'm going to do my second tweet. I've never seen this done before. And I think it's quite stupid, but I'm doing it anyway. So... All right, they've brainwashed us. So this is a physical one in the room with the swim lanes. How many people keep a physical task board? Just curious. All right, so that's about half. How many people keep an electronic task board? More electronics. Wow, that's impressive. How many people use Urban Turtle? Four. How many people use Agile Zen? Two, three. All right. Any others? On time. How many people use on time? Okay. Oh, that's the most popular. All right. So 8 or 9 of them. So that's interesting. So you're on time because of that awesome Scrum video, right? Yes. Scrum in 10 minutes. All right. So next thing. Let's move along. How do you manage your tasks? So there's lots of different ways. Lots of manual ways. Enter the solutions that you can use if you're on TFS. And I should ask, how many people here are using TFS in their organization? Wow, look at that. That's got to be 95% of the room. Stand up if you're not. 2, 3, 4. That's enough. Sit down. All right. So, there are only 4 losers in the room. All right, so if you're using TFS, you've got a series of choices in terms of front ends. The most popular one seems to be Excel, and then Project, then Visual Studio. There's a series of other ones. My favorite, well, obviously some people here were using Urban Turtle. My favorite is Team Companion, which is an Outlook add-in. How many people use Team Companion? See, it's incredibly popular. There is a guy in the back room. Oh, Mr. Borton. So Mr. Borton's votes count about 20, all right? So, good. So, this is my quote. See, I'm quoting myself now. With TFS 2010, in regards to companies that were using work items, 90% of their use was in Excel or Visual Studio. That was my experience. Would you concur with that, Richard? Yes. Richard concurs with me, so it must be accurate. Okay, so I just make this observation because rich clients were the way to go. And this is Marlon, project manager in our office. He's not cool enough to call a Scrum Master. You have to do a few hoops before you get that title, and you can put it on your business card. It's pretty cool. He uses Excel and goes through. It's a little bit tricky. You've got to work out how to change this flat to tree. And you come in here, you choose the right query. It will automatically ask you to change the tree because there's no combo box here to change it. Can you believe that? And then you click convert, and we're in action. And this is how a lot of people start using things. And then you've got John. Where's John? Is he around? He is in the room. There he is. So he's a true blue dev. And he would only use the Visual Studio experience. So he's in here, does the exact same task that I showed you, but he's doing it in Visual Studio. Instead of clicking on the tree, he clicks on implementation, and he's in business. All right. He puts all the work items in, and everything's working quite nicely. Now, there's other alternatives out there. Project, we can just use Project. So we can enter those same things in Project. Now, there are certain white robes, and I can't imagine they would use the word Project, Microsoft Project with Scrum. Would that be right, Richard?
I don't even know what that is. That's from the devil.
All right, so this is Project. Who here uses Project? Okay, so 8 or 9. So this is just entering the same stuff in Project. I actually quite like it. This is 2007. 2010 looks like this. It gets a nice timeline, and it can be very useful, especially when you're trying to get a new job from a client. You can put them in here. You can print this out. Looks pretty cool. And it looks like you're pretty organized. So it gets a little further. And there is another step beyond this. How many people have Project Server in their organization somewhere? Okay, so there's about 12, 13 of you. Microsoft released something which is called the Project Server Connector. Yep. So that, has anyone got that up and running? Okay, so it's pretty new, and what that does is when you're using TFS, you can see them in Project Server. So I have been to a number of companies where they actually have project managers who spend pretty much their whole day trying to keep these things up to date, trying to get more information from the devs, that type of thing. It's a little bit of it's a bit like the a great white shark. Everyone's frightened of swimming in Coogee Beach because of the great white shark. And everyone's frightened of this project server. it's probably worse. So anyway, this is what's involved. When you install this Project Connector, all you need to do is add this one field, Project Server Submit Required. When you add that one field into this view, then all the user stories, you change to yes, and those project managers can see it all. That's basically what you need to do if you want to use that in a, and typically we're talking large organizations here, okay? So, all right, so when you want to open project after you've installed the connector, you come into Tailspin Toys, you will see those ones that I just ticked appear here, and you need to put them into the right iteration, okay? You need to lobby them to have them automatically put into the iteration, but there's a number of reasons why. Can anyone think of why these don't automatically go in the right iteration? And it's because there's a lot more to running a project than just what the devs do. And so project managers don't want their schedules screwed up by devs adding stuff. So these just go down the bottom and they add them up. All right. So now, of course, these little men tell you that you've got resourcing things, but if you've got a good Scrum Master, we don't worry about what Project Server tells us. We don't work like that, have resources like that. But if you were using, you can just let them think that they're telling you what to do anyway. So you've got these resourcing problems. You can click on those guys and see. Project Server will just tell you which dev should do the next chunk of work. Magic, isn't it? Okay, Richard, don't listen to any of this stuff. It's just disgraceful. All right. So, and then you can share project progress with the bosses, etc. Now, I want to tell you about the next version of TFS. Okay, let's hope it's soon. We have no idea. We will find out if they announce anything at an upcoming conference like Build. But we hope to get some good news. But what we do know from Brian Harry, he is the boss of TFS, and he's pretty transparent. How many people have read Brian Harry's blog? Okay, that is not enough. Okay, so that is homework for you guys to do tonight. Actually, don't even go to the party tomorrow night. Go back and read Brian Harry's blog. He's got some real gems in there. So what we do know is the next version of Web Access is written in MVC. MVC is the coolest thing around. And it's got the Metro UI. So I've got this famous quote. Once the next version of TFS is released, say TFS 2012, I don't know what it will be called, then I predict users will quickly discover the web UI is the richest experience, and then we'll see 90% of web item use will be in the browser. What do you think, Richard?
Well, I would expect that most web item use would be in the browser, like 100%.
Oh, wow. All right. But there'll be lots of people that don't read blogs, and they won't even discover that there is a portal. But anyway, once we get there, you will start seeing stuff like this. This is the new MVC portal. One of the cool things, you know, Team Foundation Server now has a team in it. Pretty good. So now we can specify the team. That took them a little while to get going on that. If you want to know the reason, I'm sure Anthony Borton will tell you after the session. Anyway, so you click on the backlog now. And you will have this. I have used it. It is friggin' fast, very fast. I couldn't even believe it could be this. I think they had 1 million work items in the one I was. It was just a test, and it was very fast. So here you go. You just you'll see up in the right hand corner up here. This is the past velocity or the past number of points done in past sprints. So you'll see how many points were getting done. You'll see over here is where you enter a work item, and you just enter and press add, and it'll just add down here. They wrote their own grid, and it is blazingly fast. That is, you can then click on that, and up will pop this UI, so it's just the same stuff. This works pretty nice. As you can see, it's kind of got the Metro UI. You come back, and so you can... There's some little gems here that you don't pick up straight away. You can drag and drop to change the order. No clap or nothing. No, correct. So you guys like opening each one and changing the number, and then when you change that number, you have to go to the other ones and change all the other numbers? Never mind. Okay. All right. You can also get one of these guys and move it, you know, drag it over to the left. I don't know how people will know to do that, but you can do that. Yes, Louis?
Is there multi-select?
Yes, there is multi-select. Yep. So it works really nice. And so this UI, as you can see, even those couple of functions that I've just told you don't even exist in the Visual Studio shell, okay? So straight away you can see it's got more functionality. Over here, when you go into a sprint, you can click on this little button down here and break down the user story into tasks. You can see what's going on with the current sprint and the burn down up here. And you can see who's slackening off and get some whips out. Or, if you're Richard, coach the team. Or threaten to sack them or something. So we've got the boards. So those few people that bought Urban Turtle, the rest of us get it for free in next version. And we have this electronic task board. So this electronic task board, I've got a spy in here taking photos of my screen. But it's all right. There's nothing secret here. It's all public. So you can have this. You can drag these guys across. And obviously it changes the state. The next thing I just want to... I should just ask. How many people like the look of the next version? All right. Take that as... Who doesn't? All right. So that's 100%. Excellent. Fantastic. Write that down, Richard. All right. So... Where are you at? You know when a customer asks where you're at? What's the most common answer when you're asked where are we at? 90%. It's, we're taught that from the very first time we open up any shell. So we say 90% done. I always think it's very good to say, all right, that's very interesting. I've just gone and had a look at a couple of reports and it says... it says that you have actually completed this task. You've mostly completed this task and not done that. And what, are you sure? And you say, oh yeah, I've done the hardest part of that one. Don't worry about that. Why haven't you started the next one? Well, that's a simple one. I'm not even worried about that one. And this one only says 60% done. Oh, I've done more, I just haven't updated it. So developers always have an answer for everything, okay? But the reason I love this report so much is this is the first time we've got devs and testers married. We've got the marriage of devs and testers working together. And one of the toughest things about Scrum, a lot of people find it difficult, is a sprint isn't over until all the product backlog items are complete and tested. Okay, there's no such thing as, all right, we've made our sprint goal, we've done it all, and now it's ready, we're waiting for testers to test it. That's not how you're meant to work in the ideal world of Scrum. And so getting devs to work on the current sprint as you're going has always been difficult. TFS 2010 obviously has the ability here to know which user stories or PBIs have been tested and passed by the testers. So what is cool about this is to say, well, it's all well and good you've got all those answers, but you've had one item tested and it failed. So you want to revise that 90% done? And they would say, of course, 80%. Great. So the other way that you can see how projects are going is to look at the portal. And that portal is done with Excel Web Services. And the reason for Excel Web Services... that choice of technology wasn't so that the portal worked so slow. It was so that you could have power users, project managers, come in, change a couple of filters, resave it, and the charts would update. All right, so moving on to the great white shark. The typical answer when you talk about dollars, how much are we going to spend and how... Which date will this be delivered? The typical answer that we're taught is how long is a piece of string? to get those numbers, you can open up Excel and do some rough calculations, back of the envelope type stuff. Or you can get friendly with this scary tool and put in the rates. This is all you've got to really do. You've just got to put in these rates for each developer. And when you open this up, you'll see these two figures show. So this is adding no data entry. This is just adding up all the existing stories that are in your backlog or in all the future sprints if you've mapped them out. So this gives the bosses who need to work out how much money that they're going to be spending some type of ballparks. Okay, I wouldn't rely on this, but it is the easiest way to get these numbers. So install Project Server Integration, you'll get these numbers. What do you think, Richard? You converted? No? Bit of work to go. All right, next one. What about when the customer says, look, I want to add all these types of things? Now, of course, we would use story points, which they will then possibly convert to something of equal story points in the past. And then they could see whether that would cause any potential problem. Anyway, so this, basically, you set a baseline, and from that point on, it will tell you any the impact of changes. And it may not impact the schedule. It might only impact the dollars if some guys were just sitting there not doing any work. But, of course, that would never happen on a good Scrum team because we're all self-organising. Okay, but I have seen some Scrum teams that don't self-organise. All right, the next one, getting your timesheets in, pain in the neck. One of the nice things about this, we have this problem, and I've taken some real emails from the guys pleading, please do your timesheets because they get a free lunch if they do their timesheets. You would think that would be easy, wouldn't you? It's not. All I have to do is have one person not do their timesheets, they spoil it for everyone, and then they pummel that guy. Perfect. Great for morale. Okay. So, there's some more. Okay. These are real ones. Anyway. So, this means that they're almost done. Okay. So, you know, there's people that it doesn't matter what you will do, they will not enter their timesheets on time. John, do you know anyone like that? No. No, he doesn't. But there are people like that. And this has already the work you've checked in. So you can see all that. You just have to put time against it. We don't have time for that. So we just put 8 hours on the first task and the rest were zeros and that's done. Timesheet's finished. All right. So next one, project related files. This is a common one. It's just a little cleanup one, but I'm going to mention it anyway because every time I go into a company, I see this stuff. Yeah, I got so many requirements in their emails, on Word docs, in different places. You know the answer? SharePoint is the answer. The question is irrelevant. Right. So that will get you a long way in consulting. So here is a whole series of different things. You've also got the wiki, so you've got both of these guys. This is a real screenshot I took of a project, and I'm just showing you that these files are there, but the reason that I'm showing you this is because the devs have never seen this portal. Even though, well, they never go to the portal, even though they put all the files there, okay? And the reason that they put the files there is just using the shared documents. Pretty simple stuff, but it just drives me crazy every time I look at a project, they're not using it. All right, you agree with that one, Richard? All right, good. I'm just wondering if I missed any of my tweets. I missed the five war room. This is getting monotonous. Okay. Moving along. Oh, where is my project at? I just forgot that one too. Oh. This. I'll just sit here doing my Twitter. You just carry on. Okay. All right. I'm up to date now. I've only got 500 more of these things. Okay. Oh, I've got another one. Okay. Fantastic. All right, now all go back reading your Twitter and then you don't have to listen to me. Great. So here is this. The next one is communication and level of visibility. So I believe this, in Scrum, we have the definition of done. I think that that there is also the definition of done in respect of communication. The typical definition of done is in respect of quality. What is... what is the quality that the team agrees to get to? They agree to compile the code. You know, they agree to, what's some other ones? What's some good definitions are done? Have all the check-in policies on. It's tested. Richard? Richard doesn't have definition done. It's so last year. Yep. Deployed? Oh, who has deployed in their definition of done? Oh, three. Three on almost continuous deployment. Impressive. All right. That's next year at TechEd. My prediction is continuous delivery or continuous deployment will be all the rage, and there'll be lots of sessions. If you look at the session guide this year, there's really nothing on continuous integration or continuous deployment. We just care about developing. It's not that important to deploy. Anyway. But next year, we will want to. So in terms of communication, I like the guys to, when we assign a task and they've completed it, I like in the definition of done to come back with a done email. One of the reasons I like that is when a developer has finished, you know, coding up, if you give them feedback instantly on that, if you call over the product owner and say, is that this done? Do you like it? And he gives you a couple of small changes, you can make them in an instant. But if he asks you, you know, in the next sprint review, or, you know, usually he doesn't get around to everything, a couple of sprint reviews later, he wants changes to what you were working on ages ago, that costs a lot more time and money. So if you have a product owner who gets it done every time with some evidence of what was done, and you encourage him to reply to those, then I think you're going to have a better solution. Do you have a question? So what do you mean by validation? Right, so the question from the front, does Scrum have any step in it that checks that the product owner is happy with what has been done? It does. It has a formal ceremony, and that is the sprint review. Okay. Now, you can modify... you cannot modify Scrum, no. But if you were to be what's called... How many people have heard of Scrum Butt? Not that many. Oh, that's terrible. So Scrum Butt is another form of Scrum where you don't do everything in Scrum. You do Scrum Butt, we force everybody to enter timesheets. Scrum Butt, but we have two product owners. Scrum Butt, we don't force, what's another Scrum Butt, Rich?
Stand-ups.
Yeah, Scrum Butt, we don't worry about stand-ups. We just sit down. Okay. Right, okay. So his observation is, can you do Scrum but waterfall? This guy is a loser. All right. Okay. So we have this definition of done. And this is not part of Scrum, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Scrum but you force them to send emails. So sending a done email, I like to send a done email with screenshots. Now, I was sitting down with the product owner of the Telerik stuff. His name's Joel Semniak. And he said, oh, because I was saying, you know, I always get the guys to show evidence of their done so you can force the product owners to quickly give some feedback. He goes, oh, screenshots? No, I get them to record a video. I said, you record a video, what, on every user story that's done? He said, yes. And I got to tell you, I honestly didn't believe him, because, you know, some of these guys kind of talk up their teams. I said, can I look at your email? Show me one. And he typed screencast. And his inbox is full of these screencast ones. So I went back and I thought, this is awesome. And I'll just show you one. But I'll tell you the reason I think it's awesome. I've just picked one last night, a real one. Oh, trending. So let me just tell you how this works. But if you ask let's just say the user story is add tax. We want to add in tools options the tax rate so different states in America can use it, or the GST or whatever it is. The developer will typically do that task and then they will say that's done. And then you'll go to run it and something won't work properly. And then he will say, well, it works on my machine. That typical thing. When we got our office in China, the first time I reported a bug, they said to me on IM, oh, it works on my machine. That was the first time I realized it works on my machine, transcends all boundaries. Okay? It's universal. So the good thing about doing this, if you have to record this, then you have a guy who has to record a quick video. I'm talking about 60-second video. He goes into tools options. He changes the tax rate from 0 to 10%, saves that, comes back to the invoice, adds a new invoice. You'll see 10% turn up. You'll see the calculation done correctly, and you'll press save. Now, the mere fact of having to record that, he has to fix all the bugs along the route to do that. Like, I know that you could update that, and as long as you close the options form and close the order form and get it all back, it will work. You know, that type of scenario. So this is just one of...
Oh, show the coded UI test
let me just see if I can find the sound.
Is, basically just the one test, which is a proof of concept, which basically just changes the drop-down to
months, and then it asserts that the date drop-downs will change to 24 months in the past. So I'll just go ahead and run this. And while this is running, it's really important to note that I'm not touching the keyboard or the mouse at all. This is all recorded. So you can see it's doing all this work for me, selecting that feedback page, and then when that comes up, it chooses the right things and then asserts that the right stuff is there. So that test passed. So thanks.
All right. So that was just, I just picked up a random one last night, which was one where he was putting a coded UI into a new project. And, you know, the whole team gets to see how that works. So tell me, how many people are convinced that screencasts are good ideas? It's about half, maybe. All right. So anyway, the tool that you use to do this is called Jing. It's from TechSmith. It's free, perfect price. That makes you all happy. And when you record it, at the end, it's just automatically it uploads to Screencast automatically and puts the URL on your clipboard. So all you have to do is open up your email and go paste. Yes, troublemaker. What about all their data? What do you mean their data? Oh, all right. See, he's asking me how are you going to run, he's talking about unit testing now, essentially, and he wants to know how do you run a test when you require certain data? That's a pretty random type of question, but never mind, I'll answer it. You need to look at, you know, set up and tear down inside unit testing.
Sure,
you
can. But I'm talking about, what's the point of having the video when you're
done,
the user's coming back and says, well, I haven't got that data, so yeah, it looks like it worked.
Okay, so his observation is that if a user wanted to try to reproduce in that exact video all the stuff, it's not going to work for them because they wouldn't have the exact same data in their system. The point of it really is it forces, it's a nice way to show that the entire story is presented from end to end. And it's an organized way that the developer doesn't just, you know, compile their stuff and test without the entire start to finish. One of the best example I can give you is I bought my wife, this is a few years ago, I bought my wife a brand new Windows Mobile 6.5. And I thought I was quite generous, it was about $800 or something. And she can barely use a phone. She has trouble just even typing the numbers in. And it had all this cool functionality on it. And then she went out, this was 3 or 4 weeks later, she went out and bought an iPhone, which to me was, back then, was the end of the world, okay? That was cause for divorce. And I was pretty disappointed because we were, you know, we're a Microsoft shop and there's nothing wrong with Windows Phone. I hadn't actually used an iPhone. But the next day when she sent me an email with a picture of our kids, since I knew she didn't know how to use a phone, how could she possibly take a photo and email it? So I wanted to, she thought that was special. And now I knew my phone had a camera, so I took a photo. And then I went over to the email client, and then I navigated to a folder and found it and put it in. But my wife, if she opens Word and the document isn't in file open, then she can't. She says the document got deleted because she doesn't. She doesn't even know how to navigate through folders. So My point is that the Apple guys, and I don't know what they did, they would have had a user a scenario from beginning to end. I want to take a photo and email it. Where the Windows Mobile guys, they had one guy doing the photos and saving, and they had another team doing the emails, and it didn't work as nicely back then. So that this forces the whole scenario to be done. So his observation now is what I just showed is awesome. So that's great. All right. I got one happy customer. So anyway, this is the definition of this. I am going to just tell you, we'll get into, this is normal Scrum where you have a definition of done. And this is, you know, I've gone through, this is an kind of put my own slant on this, and I've said that there's seven levels of the definition of done. So the first level is the code compiles. And the tasks are updated and closed, and there's no high priority defects. If you can, you know, check in a piece of code and it's in that stage, I say you're at level one. Level two is you have all the above, plus you have all your unit tests passing every time, and you have at least 1% code coverage. Big milestone. Okay, and then I say you go on and you have a, you know, a build server running with continuous integration. You have some check-in policies with the comment policies and all the work items. Every time you're checking in, they're against a work item. The code reviews by another team member and you're sending done email with screenshots. And then I go through and I talk about further ones. Acceptance criteria. So the acceptance criteria was all met and specified in the beginning and you have some automated functional tests. And if you're at that level, you're at level four. Okay, who's at level four in the room? All right, hold on, let me go. Who's at level one? Richard, are you at level one?
I'm at seven.
Seven. He doesn't even know what the seven are, but he's already at level seven. So, that is so funny. All right. So the next one, anyway, I'll let you guys have a look at this if you're inclined. But deploying to UAT, continuous deployment, you're at level 5. And then if you want to get the whole lab management, having every single thing tested on multiple different environments, you're at level 6. And only Richard will ever know what's at level 7. All right. So that is that. The other thing I'm going to mention to you, and this is a good tip, I believe in the acceptance criteria. One of the most painful things is when you're dealing with a customer or a product owner who keeps saying every time he sees you complete a feature, oh, why doesn't it do this? Where's the right-click menu to filter? Why can't I click on the column headings? You know, I thought these things are obvious. Aren't you an expert? Why didn't you just do all these things? And I say, well, they weren't specified. You know, I just thought you wanted to just ask for a grid of data. You got a grid of data. If I did more, I'll be in trouble. So I kind of like this style where you have the user story, okay, and you have the acceptance criteria. The acceptance criteria, now this is my own slant on this, but if you just say, look, when I enter Adam in the search box and click search, then I see that. I see that as not very good acceptance criteria. I like a little bit more where you have the positive test, the negative test, and then you put all the extra stuff under a heading called gold plating. So if there's no results, return, show a message box. So they can't say, well, you know, you didn't show a message box. If you want validation, it's called gold plating. If you want a right-click on a column heading, gold plating. Anyway, you can have a look at some of these examples, and the reason that I think it's good is because then these form the steps of your test cases, which form your steps of your automated functional testing. So anyway, enough of that. All right, this is what we get out of the box. Forget about that. The next thing I'm just going to mention is I like Team Companion. I know that it's obviously not mainstream in this room, but plenty of people do like it. And most of our customers are using it. So when you're using Outlook, you complete a task and you press a button called Done. When you press Done, it will check a series of things, like the remaining work is done, there's no link bugs, etc. And then it sends back the email to the person who originally sent it with the URL. And, you know, it has the entire rich history of an email. I think it's quite compelling because I hate receiving a plain text email back when I send an email with a screen capture and I can't even remember what I sent now. So I find it completely compelling. And I think these guys from Croatia have done an awesome job. And I think it's the best TFS add-on out there. All right. What's new in Scrum 2011? I'll just quickly cover it. We don't have pigs and chicken stories anymore. And we don't use the word commit. We use the word forecast. Okay? As developers, we don't want to commit to anything. So, and the product owner doesn't prioritize the backlog. He orders the backlog, and it can be ordered by many different things. All right. There, you're updated with Scrum 2011. Okay. Developers, let me just go through a couple of things during the sprint. There's three types of developers. There's the developer, in Sydney we call them Westies, okay? And this first type of developer from the West, he's using Visual Studio 2010. He does things the old-fashioned way. He builds, attaches to the this is a SharePoint Westie, okay? This is a developer doing SharePoint. He deploys to the DLLs. He uses the GAC. He loves the GAC. He likes updating the web.config manually. He doesn't mind doing an IIS reset after doing a deployment, just in case. You never know. And for debugging, he will install Visual Studio 2010 on the server. Okay. So, anyone know a developer like this? There's a few out there. I see them. All right. Now we get to the professional. They're not Westies. They're called Inner Westies. Anyone from... Who's from Sydney here? All right, about a quarter of us. Okay, so these are the latte-sipping Mr. Professionals. Is there any Inner Westies here? Oh, look, there's three of them. Okay, so these are very uber professionals in Sydney. They take requirements. They ask for acceptance criteria. They use MVC3, of course. Nothing cooler than that. They do some smoke testing. Then there is the final developer, Jesus. This Jesus, he writes unit tests for everything. TDD all the way, check-in policies. We got any Jesuses in the room? Oh, yeah. Who's got a Jesus on their team? Yes. Anything that they read every word that Scott Guthrie and Scott Hanselman say next day, implementing in production. They're not finished with just coding. They run all these tools like code analysis and StyleCop. They have continuous integration. They have gated check-ins. Who's running gated check-ins here? Ah, Mr. Borton will be impressed. That's eight, Mr. Borton. They've got web tests running. They've got every kit and caboodle under the sun. Continuous deployment, IntelliTrace, they use it all. All right. So let me just tell you some goodies in the new power tools. The new power tools have a series of pieces of functionality. You can now roll back in the GUI, this brand new feature. I would call it a bug fix because I don't know why you would have source control if you can't roll back without a command line. You can now search for work items, which is handy. And it's got some build automation tools, and if you're using all the test stuff and your TFS is getting big and fat in the file, we've got this test attachment cleanup. So here is the UI for rolling back, so we can right-click here, click rollback, and specify what we want to roll back to. All right, so grab those power tools, they're pretty good. How many people have installed the TFS power tools? Oh, wow, that is very popular. Okay, so that's about half of you. All right. So that shows how popular and solid those tools are. They are really quite good. They're almost like some of those pieces in here keep slipping into the next version. So it's almost like a preview of what's coming up. Here is the searching. You can search here and get that. And these are some of the check-in policies. I'm just going to encourage you to use some of these check-in policies. How many people use at least one check-in policy? Okay, more than half the room. These are the ones that we typically use. We use these ones on most projects. Your mileage will vary, but I encourage you to do it. I think it's a very compelling feature of TFS. Mockups. Let's talk about mockups. So you can do mock-ups by hand. You can do mock-ups with Balsamiq. You can do mock-ups with Sketchflow. Okay? I should ask, who prefers by hand? Okay? A few. Who prefers with Balsamiq? Okay, a few more. Who likes Sketchflow? About the same for all of them. That's interesting. Anyone other ones I've missed? Yes, Louis.
I have a PM that likes to use MS Paint.
MS Paint. You should show him the way, Louis. MS Paint. I haven't used that since 1995. All right. But I have seen the odd people do screen captures in that silly tool. Visio, really? Okay, all right. So, yeah, some people do use Visio. I am going to tell you what's going to happen next year. We will all be using the one tool. This is my prediction. We'll all be using PowerPoint. Oh, and you laugh at me. So here is the next version. You will click on, let's just say you're doing a window. We'll all be doing Windows Phone UI because Windows Phone 7 will be the dominant platform. That's not a joke, all right. All right. So we're doing a Windows Phone UI. You just click this on, and we have here, and over in the right-hand side, we've got all these pickers. So we just drag these little components on, and we've got a UI. Nice. Plus, it has a little... this whole storyboarding tab inside. I was pretty surprised. I've got to say, when I first saw this... I gave it a go over in the Raleigh offices in North Carolina, and I said, PowerPoint, that's not the right tool. I like Balsamiq. It should be in the web. But this tool is amazingly easy to use, and I got to say, I was completely converted. And actually, the TFS team had some nice usability labs going where they picked some people that had never used Balsamiq. They picked some people that were only using Balsamiq. They picked, can you remember the other people? They picked, so they had different groups of experience. And of the survey results that we saw, the Balsamiq users were the ones that liked this the most. And there was only two out of, it was a pretty small group, but there's only two that preferred Balsamiq over this. And they were actually not Balsamiq users. Okay, they were fresh. So it's quite interesting. You just drag these things and it works. If you want a SharePoint one, you click SharePoint, you get a base template, and then you can start adding on the different bits. And when you want to present it at the next meeting, you press F5. So it's pretty cool. Pretty convinced this is the right way to do it in hindsight, although I wouldn't have thought so. I would have thought I would have wanted a browser solution. Anyway, so we've got the web browser, and you get this, and you can go ahead. If you want a Visual Studio type shell, I don't know why you would, but you can do a Visual Studio shell. Okay, next one. Who's using NuGet? Okay, maybe a quarter of you. So I won't go through that, but if you're using Elmaha, jQuery, and Hibernate, any of these things where you've got to get five different steps to get the thing into your project, and then you've got to keep the thing updated, you should use NuGet. So you go Tools, Library Package Manager, Manage NuGet Packages, and you would select jQuery or Castle, whatever you're using. And from that point on, the thing is kept up to date. We're in business. It is the right way to go ahead and do it. So I'm pretty grateful that Scott Guthrie and those guys got this into action. Otherwise, we would have been waiting for substantial changes to the Extension Manager, and we still wouldn't have a solution like this. So I'm pretty happy about that. All right. So let's talk about the next issue, which I think is it keeps coming up every single customer I go to. I'll give you some context. In Sydney is the greatest city, okay? Except if you need to drive anywhere. If you need to drive anywhere, it's a bit of a task. If you need to get across, say, Sydney, I live in the eastern suburbs. If I was ever to want to drive over to Westyland, I have to drive through the Harbour Tunnel. Well, in the old days before the Harbour Tunnel, you had to go through, I think it was 22 sets of lights. And in peak hour, it could take you an hour to get from one side of the city to the other side. So what they did is they built this cross-city tunnel. And the thing was an absolute disaster because they charged back then $2.20. absolute disaster. Like, you know, Alan Jones got on. My mum listens to everything Alan Jones says, whatever he says. And if he tells everybody this is a rort, the government should be sacked and don't use the Harbour Tunnel in protest, then she still won't use it today. It's pretty amazing. So, you know, but we're developers. We're much smarter than that. So imagine there was this tool that could decompile any of your stuff. And it could save you hours every week. Let's just say a couple of hours every week. And, you know, if you add up a couple of hours every week and you say $100 an hour, that's for 50 weeks, that's 10 grand a year. Imagine a tool that could save you 10 grand a year and it costs 35 bucks. We wouldn't get upset, would we? No way. That was, anyway, Redgate, we all know Redgate sucks, right? Every developer has told me the Redgate sucks. Is that correct? Who's upset about paying the $35? Come on, hands up if you're upset about paying the $35. Come on, I know there's more. Richard, you can't afford it either. Put a hand up. I just had someone telling me this morning how pissed off he was. Okay? And I've only spoken to like five people this morning. So, anyway, I've got a solution for you. We now have Telerik Just Decompile, JetBrains.peak, ILSpy, there's a few more. We're releasing a decompiler too. Redify are releasing one next week, are you? We're going to have so many free .NET compilers, it's going to be a big FU to Redgate. All right. All this to save $35, and I completely concur that was outrageous. So, here is... I'm just curious, who has switched to one of these tools? Who's switched to Telerik? Wow, there's about six or seven. Who switched to JetBrains? Oh, about the same. ILSpy? Oh, even more on ILSpy. Wow. Okay. Yes? So... So what's your name? Prajeep. So Prajeep has just told me that all the other ones don't work as well as Reflector. Are you stupid? That's $35. Okay. So get with the program, use the cheap one. All right. So anyway, this, forget what he just said. Doesn't matter. This is Just Decompile. And this is JetBrains, and soon there'll be quite a few more of these guys. All right, there's ILSpy, plenty. All right, so I have they gave me this PowerPoint, and this PowerPoint has this thing in it, so I won't talk right next to it. Apparently, I can work out. Apparently, we don't use show of hands anymore. We can use this new piece of functionality that will tell me how popular it is. So I'm going to ask you a question. I'll ask you. There seems to be a bit of a move towards web over rich client and Silverlight and things like that. So I'm just going to find out the popularity. So who says Silverlight, rich RIAs, Windows Forms, all the rich client? Who says rich clients rule? Shout. All right, who thinks web is the way to go? Web. Go web! Yeah. A stupid thing, doesn't work. Okay, all right. Anyway, let me get on to... All the other presenters now are going to take this silly slide out of their presentations. All right. Yes, all right. Someone tweet that thing doesn't work. No, let all the other speakers make the same mistakes. So I did my gold plating. So anyway, my question my statement now is that we have these choices between RIAs and HTML5. So I agree with what Microsoft say, that Silverlight and RIAs have their place for lots of different projects. and otherwise, and for the other 99% of projects, we go HTML5. Okay. All right, HTML5 all the way. Anyone disagree with me? Who agrees with me? HTML5 all the way? Who says Silverlight all the way? He's asking me about code generators now. Your wife, she must have a hard time. I will tell you about code generators after this. But just GUI MVC scaffolding, all right? That'll solve all your problems, and you won't even need to come to next year's Tech Ed. All right. So HTML5, this is why it's cool. Cross-platform, cross-browser, and it's got to work on my iPad, okay? It's amazing how much damage that these iPads, iPhones have done to Silverlight. But anyway, so what you want to do is you want to go out there and get the web standards update for Visual Studio 2010. You want to use HTML5 and CSS, and this is the one that you add. Who's already done this? Just a few, okay. All right, so you got to get that. And I want to show you an app which I got. I'm just going to run this. This is a Silverlight app. It has some cool things on here. I can get this guy and move it down there. And it will replace that. Do you like that? I can get a quote. I can... Mark's, let me just... what's Google's code? Apple's code. There we go. It's working beautifully. I can move this one down here. Just drop it there, and that goes up there. Now, who thinks this isn't... Oh, where's my sound? There we go. So I can play a video.
Get a quick check in on the markets with Christina cool. Peterson.
And
joining us, Christina.
This is the only reason you need to use Silverlight, right?
Dip today. What happened?
They did.
No, wrong. This is all HTML5. I tricked you, see? All I had to do was press F11. All right. No, we're in the browser. It's all the way. And it's got all this nice stuff. I don't know why you need to do any of this stuff. But where's my thing over to the right? This screen is not showing me at all. I can press this little button over here. Yep, so I can look at my screens like that. Wouldn't you like your app to look like this? Fantastic, isn't it? It's like what? VB6. Richard, are you trying to destroy my session? All right. Okay. So anyway, that is a sample app that you can download. And there's a few things that I want to just talk about that are in this app, and I'll tweet the URL. Oh, there is the URL. It's done by a fellow regional director. And I thought it was quite a nice site. He's got a very detailed blog on how he did it. Actually, I might even open it, which is always dangerous. But you guys can have a look at it, look at my slides. But he goes through and says everything. I'll just give you the... he shows the whole process from start to finish of how he did it all. And he's giving you all the code. There's lots of bits and pieces to nick out of leverage, I mean. And I'll just come in here. I'll just give you a quick summary on my next slide. Oh, come on. What is going on here? Oh, that's why you don't click links. Oh, God. Shall I wait? Oh, bloody hell. What do I do? Should I get out my reflector? Oh, this isn't. All right. I'll restart. Accounts at a glance. I'll find that. I've only got 212 slides. So while that's going on, should I do some Twittering? Something like that. I'll just tell you my next demo that I'm going to do. I want to show you something. How many people here are familiar with CoffeeScript? CoffeeScript. Four. CoffeeScript. Not the coffee you drink. CoffeeScript. So the rest, the rest of our careers will all be JavaScript and CSS, right, from this point forward. Bit of a groan, but that's the reality. And we, from this point on, the next 5 or 10 years, we're going to be finding some solution so we don't have to do any type of CSS or JavaScript from this point on. We have kind of solved the cross-platform problem with jQuery. Anybody, who's using jQuery? All right, that's what I thought, everybody. Who's using CoffeeScript? Okay, just a few. Who's using Sass? Sass, just the same couple. Who's using Less? Three. All right, cool. So let me quickly do a quick demo of this stuff just so you understand the core concepts behind here. If you go Tools Extension Manager and you choose this Mindscape web workbench done by some Kiwis that do Lightspeed over in New Zealand, the East Island, you will find that now when you go to a new project, you will create a new project. You'll just choose a normal web app. And when we're going to write JavaScript now, we can add a new file. So right-click here, add a new file. And we're going to add the CoffeeScript one, which is at the bottom, CoffeeScript. We'll call it main.coffee and add it. Now, from this point on, we'll be writing JavaScript in a different way without all the curly braces and a nicer way of doing it. Now, these levels of abstraction are a bit scary. Just drag some stuff from the left-hand side, and you will see that we have a variable there, outer, and we've got a method there, or function, called change numbers with assigning a couple of values. And then we have a variable that calls that method. And from that point on, every single time you go to change anything and save it, it actually generates the JavaScript for you. So I'm always a little bit frightened of levels of abstraction, but now we've saved it. You click over here and you look under the main.coffee, you will find that it has generated the JavaScript. So we're not writing JavaScript anymore. We're writing this thing that has, well, half the number of lines, so that's 10 lines versus 5 lines. And you will see that, you know, this has got a number of people liking it. I believe Scott Hanselman likes this stuff. More and more of our developers enjoying this. One of the reasons that it's kind of nicer and it's not too frightening is it just emits JavaScript. So if you get stuck in, you know, these levels of abstraction which cause problems, then you can always write one more JavaScript class and put it in there. So I can go ahead and with the same type of thing, with this thing called Sass. It's called Sass, and you can just put some CSS in here. And this CSS, here's the problem with CSS. You have CSS floating all through the files, and those files have all this gunk, and you get a bit frightened. You end up, this is Sass, and so everything in navbar is together, and it's properly cascading. Okay, it's kind of nicer. When you go to this part, and now you save the file, over on the, it does the exact same thing. So it generates the actual CSS underneath it. And if we were to go and compare these two files, you have this problem. Let's just expand this. And you can see that the nav bar and all these different things have been this is how it's separated. And the problem with this type of thing just here is these hash nav bars, they end up littered through a big CSS file in different places. They're not all nested together, so they end up being quite nasty and tricky. So anyway, can I just ask before I, well actually, let me just, I'll just get back to my slides. It really remembered where I was up? No, it didn't. Oh, goodness gracious. We're almost there. So, don't click on any links. All that stuff has all the latest stuff in it. And that's the one I was just showing you, that link. CoffeeScript, SAS, or less, seem to be getting some traction. It's just like we write C#, but we also use link. It's an abstraction on top of it, and this is pretty similar. It's an abstraction on top, reduces the number of lines, makes these files more manageable. You get it from the extension manager, the Mindscape Workbench, and I've just showed you CoffeeScript, and you saw that file being generated, and that changed from that to that. There's a lot of examples out there. SAS stands for Syntactically Awesome Style Sheets. Okay? It's confusing. It sounds like software as a service, doesn't it? Or those SAS drives. So they should have removed that confusion, and it would be a lot more popular if they had have just called it Awesome Style Sheets. And we'd all be doing ASS files. So this is how that works. And it gives your structure to your CSS and removes all the repetition. So designers don't seem to like it, don't seem to mind it. I'm also going to tell you about Less, which is another... One of these tools is going to win out, SAS or Less. My prediction is SAS, but I can see that there's quite a bit of... a lot of people going towards Less. Less has some really nice things, and maybe these features will become mainstream, but you can do calculations now. So you can do little calculations in your CSS. Pretty compelling stuff. So I've just done a calculation here that changes the border widths and makes that red. All right. Now, the downside for Less is that it does it on the client, so you can see that it's actually being done on the client, so it's not just a code generator like the other one. And that's what you'll see. So next site, you guys are going to have to decide, but I'd love to know your feedback on which ones you guys end up using and why. So send me emails. I'll be very interested to watch this trend. All right. I'm going to go ahead and I'll talk to you. I'm going to just talk testers very quickly. Testers, three types of testers. There's the tester from Liverpool. He does all the manual testing. There's the tester from Manchester. He's into unit testing, TDD, and using web tests. Then there's the professional, okay? This is where we want to get to. Unit tests all the way, web tests, load tests, but the most important thing is they have automated functional tests. They're using Microsoft Test Manager and Lab Manager. I am going to quickly show one tool. Where is my Visual Studio? I'm going to do a brand new project. Hold on, let me just close this project. I've only got a couple of minutes to go, so this will be my last demo. And I'll just go ahead and I'll create a test project here. I'll call it TechEd. One of the cool things about this is an automated functional test. I like this. I like the web tests. And I am just going to start recording. So what it does is you pop open your web UI. It will connect onto your browser. Once it connects onto your browser, it records every single thing you do. So I'm just going to go onto a page here. I'll click on this. And as I click on things, see how there's one over here? If I was to come over here and type Adam and type Enter or press this button, every time I do these things, that it's all recorded over there. If I want to add some validation, I can click on this and I want to check that nobody can find anything for Adam. I click on this. I get this cool upside down iPhone. I click on quick tasks. I can say, look, I want to check that that text contains that. I click this. This is from Telerik. I think it's pretty nice. See how it's put a little tick there? That's verified that text is there. And you can go ahead and add lots of these things. So I could... I'll tell you one last thing on this. I'll just get rid of that little thing. I'll go back to the home page. One of the things that sometimes you want to do is check that this area, like this bit, is below the image, like a structure. And you want it to work in all four browsers, but you're not going to always be checking for it. So you click on this little thing to get the upside down iPhone. And see that? I'm going to select that area. So I click that. and I say, I want it to roughly look like this. So you have this thing called image verification. Now, what it's saying is, all right, I will check that it roughly looks like that, and I'll make my my tolerance. Oh, look, I don't care how much you add a bit of space here and there, but my tolerance could be 10%. And so it will check this on, say, Opera, and it will check that, because on Opera, you never know what's going to happen. That piece of text could be over there, depending on how you've done your CSS. So that would do that, and it adds that validation. So that's been added. And all those verifications happen, and you put this on your build server, and Bob's your uncle, and you've got it does everything from, it does the entire stack, all your data entry all the way down. And he's about to ask me straight after about test data, and we'll talk to him offline about that. All right, so just to finish up, obviously we all know about unit testing, so I've got some slides in there about it. I just mentioned the different types of tests. The one I care most about is functional testing and load testing. So I'm just going to tell you, you've got the load tests in Visual Studio, plus there's another one that we use quite a bit, which I really enjoy. It's called a load, this is JavaScript testing with QUnit, so I've got some samples in there. Finally, I just told you about Telerik. And then my last one is load testing. So load testing, this is load test that you have inside Visual Studio. There's this other one I love called LoadStorm. LoadStorm, and this is a real one. I took screen captures of one of our real tests where we had to certify that it was could handle 2,500 concurrent users. And it puts that green line up. It keeps adding users on from Amazon. It has these little charts that go up and down. And you'll see that the peak happens. And that was okay. We had a few funny results, and they happened like this when we started because of flood protection on the firewall. We could not work that out for a little while, so I'll tell you about that. These firewalls are built to withstand load testing. And then we had another one. This happened. We couldn't work out what had happened, but Amazon had gone down. Okay. So I don't know how you're meant to work these things out. But anyway, so hopefully we've covered all this. Next year I will be talking about product increments and continuous deployment, because I think it's all the rage. So there's our retrospective meeting. Did I do well? That's retrospective done. Thank you, guys.